I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, message to Moscow. Special envoy Steve Witkoff is in Russia for high-level talks aimed at a ceasefire in Ukraine. We have the latest. Countdown on Capitol Hill. Democrats and Republicans plan their strategies as a government shutdown draws closer. Headed to the Holy See? President Trump names his nominee to be the U.S. ambassador at the Vatican. Plus, a milestone in Rome. As Pope Francis spends another restful night at the hospital, the faithful honor an important anniversary. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Roderick. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump welcomes NATO Secretary General to the White House. The visit comes as Russian President Vladimir Putin said today that Russia agrees in principle with the United States' 30-day ceasefire proposal, but the terms need to be worked out, and that includes several hurdles, and President Trump is monitoring what all transpires in current ongoing discussions. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. Regarding those ongoing discussions, President Trump said today he's getting word that things are going okay in Russia, but adding it doesn't mean anything until he hears what the final outcome is.
President Donald Trump hosts NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte.
We're going to be discussing a lot of things. Obviously, we'll be discussing what's happening with respect to Ukraine and Russia.
Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, made a trip to Russia to meet with President Vladimir Putin.
At this moment, we have people talking in Russia. We have representatives over there, Steve Witkoff and others, and they're in very serious discussions. As you know, Ukraine has agreed, subject to this, what's happening today, to a complete ceasefire, and we hope Russia will do the same.
At a news conference in Moscow regarding the proposed ceasefire, Putin emphasized it should pave the way to lasting peace.
Armata!
Another issue for Putin, whether Ukraine could use the ceasefire to continue mobilization and rearmament.
Soldier!
Russia claims its troops have driven the Ukrainian army out of a key town in Russia's Kursk border region. Putin says it's necessary to determine before a ceasefire whether those Ukrainian troops will lay down weapons and surrender.
We want it to stop. It's also a tremendous cost to the United States and to other countries. And it's something that would have never happened if I were president, and it makes me very angry to see that it did happen.
And finally, Ukraine, you broke the deadlock. As you said, all the killing, the young people dying, cities getting destroyed. The fact that you did that, that you started the dialogue with the Russians, and the successful talks in Saudi Arabia now with the Ukrainians. I really want to commend you for this.
Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is discussing the war in Ukraine with his counterparts at a G7 meeting hosted by Canada.
So, of course, peace and stability is on the top of our agenda, and I look forward to discussing how we can continue to support Ukraine in the face of Russia's illegal aggression.
And tonight, Poland's president once again calling on the United States to deploy nuclear weapons to Poland as a deterrent to Russia, repeating an appeal made to the Biden administration back in 2022. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And joining us now is Matt Shoemaker, a former intelligence officer with the Defense Intelligence Agency. Matt, good to be with you today. So as you know, U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is in Moscow today. Talk to us about the objective about this trip and what needs to be done.
Absolutely. Thanks very much for having me. So the main point of any of this is that the American delegation actually just had negotiations with Ukraine in Saudi Arabia over the past couple days. And they agreed, or at least the Ukrainians agreed, to a 30-day ceasefire, assuming that the Russians themselves agreed to it. So the Americans have jettisoned over to Moscow, where they're having meetings, and to see if the Russians are willing to play ball more than anything. This is really what it comes down to, because President Trump's entire negotiating strategy so far was play nice with Russia publicly, turn the screws on Ukraine in order to get them to the negotiating table. Now the real question is, are the Russians playing in good faith, or are there actually bad actors behind there just trying to create tension between the Ukrainians and the Americans? So we're going to find that out very quickly.
Yeah, Matt, what's your sense? I mean, what do you think is going to happen with Russia?
This really comes down to one man's decision, President Putin, about whether or not he wants to end this. Yeah, being an intelligence officer for about 10 years, focusing on Russia, I'm very skeptical, I have to say, because this really is part and parcel of Russian operations and the way that the Russians conduct themselves. Just in the past few days, the Russians executed 5 Ukrainian prisoners of war in violation of the Geneva Convention. So there really isn't any sense from the Russian side that they're willing to play by the rules. So I'm very skeptical, to say the least.
Yeah, and in his press conference today, Vladimir Putin said that he wants a lasting peace, but that the current ceasefire deal may not provide that. So that being said, what do you think happens?
That part is hard to say. This 30-day ceasefire is supposed to be an initial step towards a lasting peace. So even if we do get the Russians to accept the 30-day ceasefire proposal, it really is up in the air whether or not we can even achieve a greater lasting peace. The thing that I'm really going to be looking for in particular are the Russian demands, because the Russians are not passively sitting by. Very much, they're very much a mafia state, for that matter. So they're going to try and get absolutely everything out of it that they possibly can, in which case, what I'm going to be looking for is, for their demands, are they going to require that NATO is not allowed to send any troops from any NATO members into Ukraine whatsoever? That will be a big one. Another aspect will be if Ukraine will be allowed to join NATO at some point in the future. That's also been a major demand of the Russians as well. So those are the two key components that I'm going to be looking for, whether or not the Russians are sticking to their guns in terms of what they want.
Yeah, Matt, let me ask you this quickly. I'm almost out of time, but what about the land that Russia currently occupies in Ukraine? Do you think that might be part of this deal? Do you think they're going to try and keep that?
That's going to be very difficult for the Ukrainians to get that back. The Russians are going to stand by that, come hell or high water. They've already included it in their constitution that those lands are part of the Russian Federation, so they would have to do constitutional amendments, which for the Russians wouldn't be too terribly hard, but that's the legal isms that are surrounding this. So it would be very difficult for the Russians to give that up.
Okay. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time and your insights, Matt. God bless.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, now to the Middle East, where Israeli airstrikes targeted a residential building in Syria. Israel carried out the strikes on what it says was a command center belonging to the militant group Palestinian Islamic Jihad in Damascus. A crater was left behind in the aftermath. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the attack was due to his country's clear policy of, quote, whoever attacks us or plans to attack us, we attack them. New York police arrested nearly 100 protesters following a sit-in at Trump Tower. Members of the organization Jewish Voice for Peace were protesting the arrest of Mahmoud Khalil, a Palestinian activist detained over the weekend by federal immigration agents. Khalil led protests last year against Israel at Columbia University. His deportation was halted by a judge while he awaits his next hearing. The Senate is inching closer to a government shutdown come midnight on Friday. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said the Democrats are united, at least for now, to not pass the House Republican six-month continuing resolution. That it doesn't look like the impasse is going to end anytime soon. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with more. Eric.
Well, good evening, Tracy. Great to be with you. Here's where things stand at the present moment. In the Senate, Republicans need at least 7 Democrats to join them in getting the House's six-month CR across the finish line. They may need 8 Democrats if Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky decides to vote against it as well. Now, those votes aren't there right now, so the standoff continues, and all federal workers can do is watch the clock inch closer to a government shutdown. As we mentioned, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says that Democrats will only vote for a clean CR until April 11th. He says that this will give lawmakers time to pass an actual budget for the rest of the fiscal year. But that short-term one-month CR won't pass a Republican-controlled Senate, so the stalemate continues. Republican senators say if a shutdown does happen, Democrats are the ones to blame.
It's really a stall tactic by the Democrats, because if they vote against it and block, if they filibuster, the shutdown is squarely on Senate Democrats. And nobody's going to be confused about that.
He understands that shutting down government would be bone deep down to the marrow stupid. And secondly, I think Chuck is shrewd enough to understand that the the Democrats would get blamed.
Democrats tell me they remain united, saying the six-month Republican House pass CR is filled with Trump budget cuts.
We do not want to see the government shut down, number two. Number three, if we're going to get this resolved as we should, it ought to be done on a bipartisan basis. We've asked for 30 days to accomplish that. That's not unreasonable.
The six-month CR is a partisan hot mess at this point, and we're united in favor of a 30-day extension to April 11th.
What the Republicans are doing is not a CR. It's a license to destroy. There are things in that that are utterly unacceptable, and it's a surrendering of the powers of Congress to the executive.
Senate Majority Leader John Thune says Democrats' former Senate leader Chuck Schumer caused this situation in the first place.
If he has problems with the current situation, maybe, just maybe, he should have funded the government when he was in charge. The reason we're stuck here voting on a CR for the rest of 2025 is because the Democrat leader refused to consider appropriation bills last year.
House Democratic leadership, who's at a retreat right now in Virginia, issued a statement to Senate Democrats. They said that they strongly support a four-week CR extension and that they want House Republicans to call everyone back to the Washington, D.C. area so that they can vote on this one-month CR. But that's not going to happen. So right now, we have to see who's going to balk first. But just a few minutes ago, I did speak with one Democratic senator. He told me that he's a no, but he thinks that there are enough of his colleagues who are going to cross over the line and pass for the House's version of the CR. A vote could take place late tomorrow. Meanwhile, Tracy, again, federal workers across the country can only wait as the midnight deadline approaches. Back to you.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll see what happens. All right. With just hours to go before a confirmation hearing, the White House withdrew its nominee for director of the Centers for Disease Control. Dr. Dave Weldon, a physician, Army veteran, and former Florida representative, is known for his pro-life voting record and vaccine safety campaigns. He created the Weldon Amendment, a companion to the Hyde Amendment that protects medical institutions that refuse to offer abortions. The White House withdrew his nomination, citing a lack of votes for confirmation. Our President Trump has formally nominated Brian Birch as the U.S. ambassador to the Holy See. Birch, president and co-founder of Catholic Vote, was selected by the president back in December. This week, his name was officially submitted to the Senate for approval. Right now, it is unclear when they will vote on the matter. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including trade war. We discuss the effects of President Trump's tariffs on the economy and what it could mean for you. And a protest in Argentina gets out of hand very quickly. Find out why. Main Street to Wall Street, threats of tit-for-tat tariffs are stoking fears about the U.S. economy, especially with the latest post from President Trump on Truth Social. In it, he criticizes the European Union for putting a 50% tariff on whiskey, saying if this tariff is not removed immediately, the U.S. will shortly place a 200% tariff on all wines, champagnes, and alcoholic products coming out of France and other EU-represented countries. Well, U.S. Secretary Treasury Secretary, that is, Scott Bessent, says that he is not worried about the downturn in the markets.
Yeah, I'm less concerned about the short term. I think we've had a big unwind, and the tariffs, we've got strategic industries we've got to have. We want to protect the American worker, that a lot of these trade deals haven't been fair. But you know, I can tell you what's not good for the economy is this government shutdown. I don't know what Democrats are thinking here, because they're going to own it. And to the extent that it hurts confidence, hurts the American people.
All right, let's bring in Rosemary Becky right now, a tax policy lawyer who previously served on the majority staff of the U.S. Senate Finance Committee as tax counsel. Rosemary, good to be with you. So first off, your thoughts on what Secretary Bessent had to say.
Great to be here. No, I think Secretary Bessent is spot on here. The president has laid out his goals very clearly with regards to these tariffs. And one of those goals is to make free trade fairer. and show that is what he's doing, and show over the long haul, I think we're going to see some really positive results. But as the president did say in his speech, it's going to be bumpy till we get there.
Yeah, and, you know, as we heard from the Treasury Secretary, you know, he's saying the Trump administration is really focused on the long-term health here and not so much the short-term. Let's talk a little bit more about playing the long game here. Is that what we should be focusing on?
No, absolutely. We should be focused on the long game here. And one of the obviously other priorities he's laid out here is that we've got to get our partners to the table and to talk about important issues like the fentanyl issue and stopping the flow of fentanyl into the country. That was one of his other goals with regards to this as well. So again, in both instances and with both goals, you've really got to look at this as a long-term timeline.
Yeah, I want to talk about the short term here for a second. You know, there has been quite a bit of volatility in the stock market due in part to sort of the flip-flopping on the tariffs. What impact does that have on investors here, you know, short term? And also, how does it impact the world's financial systems? What's happening here in the U.S.?
So what I like to tell people is they should really stay focused on their long term goals and not react to what's happening at the moment. And so continue to do your long term savings for education, for retirement and those things, and stick to your plan. Again, this is some short-term volatility, but at the end of the day, you know, we'll have greater growth in our markets. And so really, Americans need to be focused on the long-term here.
Hey, Rosemary, there's been a lot of talk about a recession, even Goldman Sachs mentioning that. Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't. As I said before, I am very optimistic. And again, I think the president was pretty clear. He laid out his goals and his rationale for putting these tariffs in place, including raising revenue, right? These tariffs are going to raise quite a bit of revenue, which will help ultimately to bring out down our debt and our deficits, and ultimately will help interest rates and hopefully will help grow our markets.
Yeah, one more thing to touch on before we let you go. We're really close to government shutdown. I mean, time is really ticking here, and Senate Democrats are threatening to block the GOP continuing resolution. Do you think that will happen? Do you think that we are headed in the direction of a shutdown? And if so, how disruptive, Rosemary, could that be for the economy?
I really don't think we're headed for a shutdown, and here's why. I do think that enough Democrats will vote for the procedural rule that will allow them to proceed and vote. And at that point, they only need a simple majority to pass the continuing resolution. I do think that Americans will blame Democrats if there is a shutdown. And I think that there are a lot of Democrats that see that and see that it will be labeled the Schumer shutdown. So I'm pretty optimistic that they will get this passed, because, again, people know it will be devastating for federal workers and others. And I don't think that anybody's looking for that at this moment.
Well, Rosemary, thank you so much for weighing in. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Well, earlier today, a federal judge ruled the Trump administration must reinstate thousands of probationary employees fired last month from a half a dozen federal agencies. They were let go as part of the administration's effort to rapidly shrink the federal workforce. The judge said that the Office of Personnel Management had made an unlawful decision to terminate them. The judge rejected the Justice Department's argument that the OPM merely issued guidance to the agencies that then led to the firings. Well, a new era begins in Greece as a new president is sworn in.
Να υπερασπίζω την εθνική ανεξαρτησία και την ακεραιότητα της χώρας.
A veteran conservative lawmaker, Konstantin Tsoulis, takes the reins as the government faces ongoing public anger over a deadly rail disaster from 2 years ago. The 65-year-old lawyer and former parliamentary speaker will serve a five-year term in a largely ceremonial role. In Argentina, clashes between pensioners and police erupted in front of Congress in Buenos Aires. A What started as a peaceful demonstration turned into clashes with police using water cannons, tear gas, and pellets on protesters. Pensioners have protested every week in Buenos Aires to complain about adjustments made to their standard of living. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, 12 years and counting. As the church marks the anniversary of the Pope's pontificate, we look back at some of the major moments of his papacy. Plus, a highly offensive event is scheduled in Kansas, why tens of thousands of Catholics are speaking out. Thanks for staying with us. Outcry in Kansas over a so-called satanic black mass slated to take place at the state capitol building. The state's governor, Laura Kelly, says that she has limited authority to cancel the event, declaring that it must take place outside and not inside the building itself. A petition launched by a Catholic group asking to shut down the event claims to have more than 34,000 signatures as of Wednesday. The state's Catholic bishops are urging the faithful to counter the planned event through prayer and good works. Well, finally tonight, the Vatican says the Pope remains in stable condition. We're told the Holy Father celebrated the 12th anniversary of his pontificate with the medical staff of Rome's Gemelli Hospital. Throughout his papacy, the Bishop of Rome has undertaken numerous journeys and engaged in significant encounters, shaping both the church and the world. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigan has more.
You know that it was the duty of the conclave to give Rome a bishop.
Era di dare un vescovo a Roma.
Upon his election, while addressing the faithful for the first time, Pope Francis introduced himself as Bishop of Rome, reminding everyone that the duty of the conclave was precisely to give the city a bishop. In his brief opening address, the Holy Father mentioned Rome four times, a deliberate choice that emphasized his desire to highlight his role as the Bishop of the Church of Rome, which presides over all other churches.
Vorrei dare la benedizione.
And now I would like to give the blessing. But first, I ask a favor of you. Before the bishop blesses his people, I ask you to pray to the Lord that he will bless me. The prayer of the people asking the blessing for their bishop.
Facciamo. Facciamo in silenzio.
Let us make, in silence, this prayer. Your prayer over me.
Bishop and people, the Pope said, a relationship that has remained vibrant and strong throughout his pontificate. Right from the start, Pope Francis showed his deep commitment to this relationship, making 12 visits to diocesan parishes in 2013 alone, the year of his election. The Pope also traveled to suburban parishes and met with people in the outskirts of the city. One notable visit was in April 2018, when Pope Francis visited the parish of St. Paul of the Cross in Corviale, a southwestern area of the capital. After celebrating Mass, he met with children, including a six-year-old boy named Emanuele, who was grieving his father's death. In an emotional and iconic moment of his papacy, the Pope comforted the young boy.
Vieni da me, Emanuele.
Come to me, Emmanuel. Come to me and whisper it in my ear. He has a doubt. He wonders if his father, not being a believer, might not go to heaven. Does God abandon his children when they are good?
Dio abbandona i suoi figli quando sono bravi. Ecco, Emanuele.
That Emmanuel is the answer.
Over the years, Holy Thursday also became a significant moment of Pope Francis's ministry. He often celebrated it with prisoners or migrants, those on society's margins, washing their feet as a humble act of service and love. The Fridays of Mercy initiative was another defining feature of Pope Francis's pontificate, further strengthening the bond between the Bishop of Rome and his flock. These surprise visits brought comfort and hope to Alzheimer's patients, residents of nursing homes, people with disabilities, and even young priests. Bishop and people, Pope Francis said on March 13, 2013. And so it has been throughout his time as Pope. Despite a packed schedule filled with international trips, audiences, and countless responsibilities, the Holy Father always found time to live out his role as the Bishop of Rome, walking alongside the faithful of his diocese. In Rome, Benedikt Cedegren, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless. We'll be right back.